Hello everyone and welcome to our Cradle to Cradle Lab Talks here broadcasted live from Berlin from our Cradle to Cradle Lab. My name is Tim and I'm very happy to have you all here with us from wherever you're sitting. And today is a very special day because, of course, as every Thursday on 7 o'clock, we have great guests here in our Cradle to Cradle Lab Talks. And today I have the big pleasure to have with me here Ladeja Godina Kozija from Ljubljana, Slovenia. Welcome to our show, my dear Ladeja.
Ja, guten Abend und herzlich willkommen. Vielen Dank für die Einladung. So, hello everyone. I am truly happy that I can join you tonight. So, thank you, Tim, for the invitation.
So, actually, Ladeja is speaking 5 languages. I'm feeling kind of embarrassed just speaking German and English. So, being even more red with not only my hair and my face, I'm more than happy to quickly introduce you to our viewers, actually, today in English, of course. Originally, you have a background in marketing and sociology, and you have been lecturer for communications strategies for many years. You have been owner of a communications agency for 25 years called RIA, based in Ljubljana. And in 2016, which is very important and interesting, as founder and executive director of Circular Change in Slovenia, the stakeholder engagement platform. And also you are co-authored the first roadmap to circular economy in Slovenia in 2016. And since 2017, you have been chair of the coordinations group of the European Circular Economy Stakeholder Platform, founded by the EU Commission, as well as the European Economic and Social Committee. So many words. Is that right?
We are already tired at the very beginning.
Okay, that's it. Thank you very much, guys. Yes. So I'm so happy to have you here. If that was correct already, I'm really happy to dive in quickly because the European Circular Economy Stakeholder Platform, it is about being a network of networks. So probably we start with you explaining to us what a network of networks is looking like and what is the reason for this and the goals.
Yeah, so thank you once again. Yes, to start with the European platform, I'm very happy that we have this platform, and this is really the platform that is open for everyone. And saying that it is the network of networks mean that when it has been established, so it was established 2017, also the coordination group took place, and 24 members, so 24 organizations, representatives of this organization, are presenting this coordination group. What does not mean that it is closed, but those members that I'm chairing are really then spreading the word, inviting others, enabling different organizations, people, stakeholders to contribute, to share knowledge, to take a look at good practices, contribute good practices, and so on and so on. So mainly this is a kind of central point for everything what is related to circular economy. At least this is our ambition. Yeah, ongoing okay. process.
Okay, and we will dive into also the topics, of course, the European Green Deal and the circular economy, all the strategies behind it, the Circular Economy Action Plan and so on. First of all, probably again, from your point of view, you might summarize for us in your words, your personal definition of a circular economy to start.
Yes, I will use my very personal definition that circular economy is a tool with which we can maintain the quality of life. Because, yes, if we go to all the definitions, it is about how we produce things, not in a linear way, so to take and then use and throw away, but in a circular one, so that we maintain value for as long as possible by producing it, designing it first in a way that we can then maintain it, so to repair, refurbish, recycle at the very end and so on. And but when I talk to different people, you know, it sounds so complicated and complex. So therefore, I use it that if you use your common sense, and think about what contributes to the quality of life, then probably you will do the things or choose things or solutions that are circular, because by using them, you are preserving the nature, you are contributing to the human development, and of course, we are part of nature, and therefore, this makes sense for the whole planet and for us as human beings.
And being part of the circular economy stakeholder platform in Brussels for the European Union, you're talking about being a network of networks. What, from your opinion, what is the state in which we are when we talk about networks? How many networks do you see about circular economy? And what is probably also the trend? Because from my perspective, there is an upward trend. Even though, how do you see it? What are the trends right now? And also in the light of Corona, I think we should talk about this as well.
Yeah. Okay. So first about the networks and about different stakeholders. If I take the perspective of 5 years, because I'm engaged in this, let's say, circular movement for the last 5 years, I can see a significant change. So at the very beginning in 2015, when the first circular economy action has been introduced, it was really more something what was related to policymakers. So there was an action plan, and now what to do with that? So the business sector was not aware of that, what circular economy actually means. It was very much related to waste management and to NGOs. We did a small research at that time, and it was, oh, don't bother us in the business sector. They said, don't bother us. They care about, and it is only about waste management, you know. So it changed a lot because now we see that business is recognizing this as opportunity. So and on different levels also with other stakeholders, let's say what cities are doing or local communities, how they're becoming engaged. Then of course NGOs play their role. And other organizations. So I would say that this bridging between top-down and bottom-up approach is really something what we can see and feel. And what you said before, now in Corona times, again, my personal experience is that we realized how important the networks are. We realized that first in the family, because this is our first network or first community, then on the local level, so what we can do with neighbors or with those that are close to us, then on national level, the first country we collaborate is the country next to us, so again, our neighbor. So I guess that we somehow, this sense of community was very much in the center of our feelings and experiences. And it contributes to that we understand now better what social capital means and what the value of networks is.
I'm absolutely following your words. I feel that we can't do enough for both bridging the gap, what you've said, in between the policymakers, businesses, and especially talking for Cradle to Cradle NGO, we feel that still there's a large proportion, unfortunately, in society, which is really not having a clear idea of probably also the urgency and the need for shifting the way we do things, shifting our economic systems. You as a sociologist, what is your view on society right now? What's your feeling? Do people already understand what we mean? I feel they understand sustainability now, but do they understand circular economy? Do they understand cradle to cradle?
I would say that it is not so much about understanding, it is about feeling and our behavior. So we don't like change. We don't like to change ourselves. And once you introduce something new, no matter whether this is new concept or new behavior or whatever, we don't embrace it usually. We say, oh yeah, let's see how the others do, but please not me. And this is very normal. And now with this crisis, what I would like to emphasize is we were talking a lot now about this Corona crisis and the pandemic, but at the same time, we realized that climate crisis is still there. So we've got two crises all of a sudden. So there is something good in that, because we have realized, oh, climate crisis has something to do with corona crisis, because the way we behave, produce and everything affects our health, affects our natural system and so on. So this was a kind of, let's say, a positive lesson learned, that those two crises do coexist. But on the other hand, when we are taking this language, this narrative, the word crisis, do you like crisis? No, you don't, probably. Neither do I. So therefore, again, what wakes up in our minds, in our hearts? It is we are frightened, so we are stressed. And this is not the state under which you can open yourself and start improvising, creating, you know, embracing something. So here is this danger. Then when we dangerous, critical, complex, complicated, then we are not willing to be part of that. So it's so important how we address that. Mm-hmm. And in my messages, I was talking always those days about, let's embrace that. It will not disappear. Yeah. Neither climate crisis nor corona crisis. But if we embrace and co-live with that, then we are opened for new solutions and, yes, for new ways of dealing with that.
From what you're saying, there are some more questions coming up from me. Before we continue, I'd like to tell everyone out there, send us your questions, because in some minutes we open this discussion and I would like to get your questions here on stage. So visit Slido, www.sli.do, with LabTalk, which is the code, so you can enter our stage and deliver your questions, and I'm more than happy to get your questions here involved in our discussion. So my question now, Ladea, actually, which kind of provoked me now, because you said we should talk about this differently. What is your feeling about the rhetoric of crisis, having crises and being afraid of our future, of the Fridays for Future movement? What is your feeling, and can we get people to the table by saying, I want you to panic?
No, I don't think, but this is my personal belief. And as you mentioned before, I used to work in creative industries for many years. And at that time, I was devoting quite a lot of my energy, and I was very curious about identities, you know, about this link between the storytelling, identities, brands, and so on. And out of that, I have learned how important it really is how the message is delivered, and how we as human beings do resonate with that. So do we identify with something or do we not? So to take an example, if the lady is pregnant, then she will realize, oh, everyone is pregnant. And when she notices the message about new napkins or food for babies, she will react, because she is in the stage opened for this kind of messages. And it is always like that. So what is that that triggers us now? So where do we, what do we identify us with? And therefore, I said at the very beginning that this quality of life, living a good life, we are very simple beings. We like to be loved. We like to belong somewhere. We like to be treated well. So with this, we do identify. Mm-hmm. And we can co-create our everyday life in this direction by our daily choices.
I feel that you're having this different state of mind, this other perception of human beings in mind, where the discussion in sustainability has been developed to a point where we say we should lower and decrease the human footprint to the level of zero. So this is a vital part in the discussion, whether we see our future in reducing footprints, or whether we see, and that's the more the position of cradle to cradle, change our way of thinking, change our way of doing businesses and living our lives in leaving a big and positive footprint. So changing the way we do things instead of reducing bad habits. So what do you think about this in these times where I feel most parts of our society are still talking about being less bad, but do we really have the time for being less bad? What's your opinion on this?
I don't know how much time do we have, because now we have realized, even with Corona, how quickly things can change. And even with this climate crisis and all those calculations about how we are destroying the planet, that we need three planets and so on. So I don't have this glass ball to say whether we have 1 week or 1 day or 3 years. But back to what you ask, yes, I absolutely agree with that again, that if, of course, diminishing CO2 footprint is something, lowering it, it is something what we should take care about. But it is much more important how we change our mindset and how we approach that, because we can, I don't think that we can live without the impact on this, on the nature and the planet. So this is very much what Cradle to Cradle concept is talking about. So let's see how we can be part of this nature. And this is what I have noticed, at least in the discussions. Now, I was in a very small bubble with those with within my community. But on the other hand, I've got a lot of discussions around the globe like we have now. And we jointly found out in the microcosmos and in this macrocosmos that we reestablished our relation with the nature. And this lockdown, people spent more time in the forest or garden or whatever, and all of a sudden they realized, oh, that is something what I'm part of, that is something what brings me joy. So this is the starting point, because if you're detached from the nature, again, you don't identify it with the nature, and then your
Instead
solutions
of being
are
part
not
of it,
aligned.
Right?
Yes. Exactly. So therefore, I'm very much in, I wouldn't say in favor, but I really like the concept of cradle to cradle, putting human beings in the hugging relationship with the nature, not above or under, but really to be part of that. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. I feel that, yeah, we are of the same, we have the same idea of what human perception of you, of being human beings, how we could integrate this in a bigger picture. Within the bigger or big picture discussion, I think what people got thrilled by steps been taken by the European Union and the European Commission following the ideas of circular economy. So with the Commission of Ursula von der Leyen, and she personally dropped the concept of circular economy now, people really feel that we are on the right path, and many of those stakeholders got listened to, and even though you brought into the discussion, and it, for me it felt like your fear or the interference of the coronavirus right now, because almost everybody's talking about this. And what I'm asking you now is, what is your feeling or idea? Like, how much time do we have we lost over the Corona crisis, where still all the other crises don't stop, and they continue being very much important for having quality in life? You said it this way.
What I would say is, what we have realized is really and experienced that most of the systems do not work during this Corona crisis. We realized that. So healthcare system.
So I think we lost you. We quickly lost Ladea, but I think we can get her back.
Collapse.
So I think we got you back, Ladea.
Oh, are we?
So we are just missing you for like 10 seconds, so probably just restart.
Okay. No, I just the point was that the systems are under question, so that we realize that the health system, education system, the whole economic system, all these systems are under question, that they do not work perfectly well. I use the metaphor like Lego bricks, you know. When you have the Lego bricks and then you build something together and you have a nice house or whatever next to that. So you're using these bricks for building something. And that was our world built out of those bricks. And now, if we are brave enough and courage enough, we can take these bricks apart. What does not mean that we do not have certain parts, but to put them together in a different way. That is my view, at least, and I do hope that we will manage to do that, because obviously the old system was not the best system that we can jointly co-create. And Corona gave us this opportunity, or we put it on different lenses, and hopefully we will start rebuilding this in a new way. So not to go back to the caves and stop producing, using and doing things, but really to do it in a new, fresh, creative way.
Yeah. So what's your feeling? Because this is politically a discussion right now in Germany, if the state is providing a lot of money for companies who clearly they haven't had to do with the breakout of the coronavirus, even though, but what they have to take off, taking care of is actually their own products and business models, and many of those are really not sustainable when it comes to economic or ecologic factors. So what do you feel, where are we going right now? Will we save all those companies who are really not being doing sustainable businesses?
Yeah, so I'm not a radical person. I'm more for evolution than for a revolution. But what I think that now with this green recovery initiative and a lot of companies around Europe and are already taking part in that, also big multinational companies. And I sincerely hope that this green recovery will remain in the focus and on the plate. But we should think about that. What will happen with big companies that, as you said, were not so green or sustainable or circular? And on the other hand, with the startups. So if we start with the startups and small companies and those that are still evolving, I think that they should really be encouraged and enabled and get funds to go quick, fast, and create their circular, sustainable business models. And on the other hand, for the big multinational companies, I would be more strict with them, and not to say now you should not produce anymore, but really to insist on that they have to change their business models as well, and to really monitor and follow what the money goes for. So the money that is invested in recovery programs should be invested in green recovery. It will take time, for of course, but at least not just to give money away and to say, this recovery is needed now. It doesn't matter whether it's green or not, but really to monitor that, to follow that, and to measure the positive impact. So I think that this transparency is very much needed, and indicators should be used for that.
So right now, I just quickly want to remind everyone out there from our viewers, send us your questions by using Slido, www.sli.do, with LabTalk. So deliver your questions. So I have already some few, even though we will continue with for some few minutes before we come to the questions of our audience. The Circular Economy Stakeholder Platform states that it wants to identify social, economic, and cultural barriers. from your point of view, what do you feel, which are the most important barriers right now we need to get out of the way for this new type of economy, for this big transformation?
Back to my background, I will say we have to start with each individual, so with our values. First of all, what is what we believe in? So what is really high on the list of priorities we have as human beings? Because I don't believe that there are two value systems or two behavior patterns or two ethics or whatever. So you cannot say, I, as a team, I have one set of values when I'm a father, and me as well, team, have another set of values when I'm a manager. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it's really important to find out, so what are those values around which we built, whether the society or the business in which we are involved or in the policy making. So this is the first thing. And the second is then the culture. So when we were working on national roadmap in Slovenia, we introduced circular triangle like mm-hmm. a concept mm-hmm. because we have realized that on one hand, we have circular economy as a model. Yes, mm-hmm. how to do this transition. On the other, we have circular change, like, yes, we have to do the systemic change, transform systems. And on the third, we have this circular culture. So where we are talking about values, behavior and everything. So and they're all interconnected. And we cannot achieve change without understanding the environment, the behavior patterns, the potentials and so on. So therefore, I would very much stress this particular part, this social dimension, because we have knowledge, we have technologies, everything is there. But how to implement it, it is based on us and on our daily choices mm-hmm. and on those who are really decision makers, what to do and how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you feel is the role of the concept of Europe, of the regions? Because I feel there are so many cultures, which is great. I think it's a great strength of us in within the European Union and in Europe, even though this might be more difficult to for understanding and for this social transformation. What do you feel about this?
Yeah, so I'm coming from Slovenia, the country of 2 million people altogether, and we always say that we are the only country with love in its name, because Slovenia has love in its name. And I feel that I'm a kind of intermediator between, let's say, East and West and Mediterranean culture and more Nordic cultures and so on. Uh-huh. So wherever I've been working, I sense that uniqueness of the environment. And this is really the richness of Europe, I would say. We should be proud of that and happy that we are different. But when, as you said before, when you are implementing new things or new concepts, like, for example, circular economy, which is not new, in fact, because many years ago, people used to live very much aligned with this concept. Mm-hmm. But now we are reintroducing it somehow. But it is very different if you do it, let's say, in Nordic countries. If you say, let's say, in Sweden, okay, now let's go to the sharing economy and let's share cars. So mm-hmm. probably they will not have problem with that. And they will say, okay, let's share it. But if you do the same thing, for example, in Romania, automatically they will say, what? Now I cannot own something. It reminds me of my history, of communism, of everything when I could not afford, I could mm-hmm. not own. Mm-hmm. No, no, no. I don't like this concept. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it's very important to understand what is the history, what are the experiences of the people, and then introduce concept in a proper way. So we have these discussions, and right now I'm working on national roadmaps for Serbia. We just introduced it a week ago in Montenegro, and then on the other hand with the team in Chile, in Latin America. And you can see the difference, the size, the geography, everything is different. But at the end of the day, people are, as I said, in the very essence, very similar.
All right. And you're doing this all together with your fellow colleagues at Circular Change, right? You do conferences and so on. You probably could give us some more details on what you do, not only in Slovenia, but also from Slovenia around the planet.
Yeah. Yeah, about Circular Change, yes, we are a private nonprofit organization, what mm-hmm. means that we have to earn money on the market to reinvest it, very mm-hmm. similar as you do. And I think it is good because then you stay grounded. You have, you know that nothing comes from heaven. So that...
Unfortunately.
Yeah, good friendships do. Yes, and social capital that I count on is you cannot buy it. But for the other stuff, yes. So you have to earn money. And what we do is now, as I said, we are focusing very much on these national roadmaps. It was not with purpose, but somehow it happened that there is more and more interest for that. And even within the circular economy stakeholder platform, we are promoting this very much because by starting the process of national circular economy road mapping, you get a very good insight into the stakeholders that are active, into the priority sectors that have the potential, into the good practices that already exist. So this is very good kickoff for the whole transition. So therefore, that is something what we are working on. Then every year we organize Circular Change Conference. This year it will be the fifth edition, mm-hmm. but because of the circumstances, we are redesigning it. It will not be an event with the participation of 500 people at the same time, but we are establishing new collaborations with new partners. It will be a kind of a roadshow. So the different topics will be discussed with different partners. And I like it very much because as we are collaborating now, I believe that there is a lot of power in this kind of collaboration and in using time properly as well and our resources. So not to do too much too often, but really to join forces and do good things together.
Thanks for those insights, Ladeia. So before we come to some more questions from our audience, I'd quickly like to mention that we are a nonprofit organization. So if you want to help us doing this work, which we do, especially in the field of education and networking, you can help us with your donation. You'll find all the information online via various channels. And of course, not only helping us with your contribution, you could also being actively a part of this movement with our 50 initiatives with more than 800 volunteers in many places. So just check out our website or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or here on YouTube. You probably watch us here on YouTube right now or on any other channel. So we are more than happy to deliver all those discussions here, not only from our lab talks, we also do conferences and so on. So we would be really happy if you would help us. And Ladeia, coming back to you, and I have some couple of questions, interesting ones from our audience. I'd like to start with Rupert, who was asking the following questions. To get people to a positive footprint thinking, what is, in your opinion, the most convincing argument? That's what Rupert is questioning.
So regarding the footprint, what is the most convincing argument that we should take care about what kind of footprint we make? Was that the question?
And especially a positive footprint thinking. So shifting, as far as I understand, Rupert, shifting the way of thinking.
Hmm? Yeah. This is crucial, shifting the mindset. And embracing this change. So, but I will go back to what I already said before, but I think it's really important that we start with ourselves and that we start looking for the choices, but from the positive perspective, not that we are guilty because we do not do something, but something else, that and not feeling stressed all the time. So I think the best positive footprint comes from the behavior that is caused because of or through joy and through creative spirit. So it is not that we do something because we have to, but because we believe and we choose this to contribute to the better life. Mm-hmm. And in daily choices, we can see at home, and I think that Corona crisis was a very good exercise mm-hmm. to go back to that, because I don't know whether you experienced that, but for me, it was like I opened my refrigerator and I said, okay, now I cannot go out. What do I have in my refrigerator? Let's organize myself so no food waste, for example. And then when we started to buy food, we were even more sensitive to that, really to use everything and so on. So I think this kind of lessons and experiences are giving us also a joy, and you feel good after preparing a lunch out of what you can find just before expiring or throwing away in your refrigerator.
Yeah, you've been mentioning Corona again, so just quickly, because people talk about green recovery plans. So what is your feeling? Are we on track about these recovery plans when it comes to those central problems like cradle to cradle, circular economy, scarce resources? What do you feel?
I think that we should be persistent here and really insist on that this green recovery stays on the top of agenda, not to compromise, because I've got a feeling when it started that it was like, yeah, first recovery and then green recovery. I wouldn't go for that. Green recovery, yeah. And nothing else. But not to be impatient, and again, not to be aggressive with that, mm-hmm. but more to embrace this opportunity and to say, okay, how we can go through this process? What is needed? What are we lacking? Knowledge, good practices, and so on. And when I was just recently asked by a journalist who said, okay, the car industry, for example, in Slovenia is very important mm-hmm. because we are suppliers to German companies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what can someone do now when there was a drop in the sales of cars, 95% in March. Mm-hmm. So only 5% of the amount of cars that were supposed to be sold were sold.
Yeah.
And so for these suppliers, so what should they do? And my answer was, it is not easy, of course. But if you start thinking not just from the perspective of supplier who is producing exactly this component for exactly this company, mm-hmm. but more to say, okay, what are my competencies? What is my value chain? What is the knowledge that my people are possessing? What is the machinery I have? So, and how can I use all that for something what is hopefully sustainable and green, and to find new partnerships as well? Maybe not over the night, but some managed to do that over the night as well, mm-hmm. because they just opened their eyes, because before they were, you know, they were like machines doing the same thing all the time, not even thinking about other opportunities. Mm-hmm. So it is not an easy thing, because it is a change, mm-hmm. but there are opportunities out there for this green recovery, for sure.
Being chair of the Circular Economy Stakeholder Platform, what is your idea on probably focusing on specific sectors? I mean, you've been mentioning automotive. Do you feel that we should have a clear focus on some specific sectors, because probably they have the biggest potential, probably, or the highest damage created, or what do you think?
Yeah, this is a tricky question, because I always say I'm in favor of systemic approach, and all the sectors are interdependent, and we should not get back to the silos, because when we are addressing cars, we are actually addressing mobility, not only the automotive industry, yep. but the mm-hmm. whole mobility. Mm-hmm. When we are addressing mobility, we are addressing energy. When we are addressing energy, we are addressing construction and building sector, and so on and so on. So all these sectors are interconnected. Mm-hmm. So absolutely holistic approach and intersectorial collaboration is needed. But back to what you asked, yes, in certain sectors, there is a lot of space for improvement. And as I said before, we have the knowledge and we have technology, and it is more about the decision and about all the incentives that are related to that. If we go to the construction sector, for example, mm-hmm. we have, first of all, to build all those new buildings, or we can use existing buildings and renovate and redecorate them for a new purpose? Or do we have to use new virgin materials, or can we use recycled materials, and so on and so on. So there are a lot of solutions in certain segments or sectors, but don't forget that they're interconnected. Never ever, because then we are in silos again and it's not circular at all.
Yeah. I feel the same, because being in silos, I mean, pretty crazy that we've closed so many borders within the European Union, whereas I think it's one of the biggest things we should celebrate within the European Union, free flows of people and labor and so on. There's so much interconnection, and you've also mentioned so many aspects from a cultural perspective, and I think it is, though, very, very complex. Within this complex world, do you feel that the EU, and probably especially the new EU Commission now, which is not so much new anymore, but are we, or is the European Union in the lead on global circular economy efforts? Because I sometimes feel they want to, but is the European Union really is in the lead right now? What do you think?
First thing is that we should be very modest and to say that we are here in Europe. We think, oh, how important we are and how big we are, and but we are not, actually, compared to other continents and to other nations around the globe. So what I like about European Union is that we are not. So they have this ambition, absolutely, to have this flag of circular transition and of being carbon neutral and all these ambitions. This is very good. But what I like as well is that we are becoming more open for the collaboration, and we are not putting Europe on the front runner who is the best and who has all the knowledge. We are more and more open for this exchange of knowledge. And this is what I noticed in those 3 years of chairing the coordination group of the European platform. At the conferences, it is much more about listening to the others. Let's say, okay, what China has to offer, what we can learn from China, for example, or what Latin America is thinking about, or what are the opportunities in Africa. So that Europe as such is very collaborative, and I like this spirit, I must say, because, and another thing is when, just today I've been listening to an interesting webinar about Amsterdam, and implementing the donut economy for the recovery. Mm-hmm. And what is on their list is really to take in account the footprint, the negative one, that they have because of the products and materials they import. So if you calculate that footprint as well, then you realize, I'm causing a lot of damage. So this is this transparency and to becoming more honest and realistic in a way, and to address the problems in a more transparent way. So I think it's very important. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Taking one more question from our audience. There's Stefan asking, shall we have a central narrative for circular economy in Europe for 2030? He is asking. Can you give us one if you have the choice? So central narrative for a CE 2030. Do you have a choice for one? Do we need one? What do you think?
I don't understand quite well. So what does it mean, central, if we would have to have a common language around that?
I think probably he's... yeah, that's the question. Narrative might be concept or might be shared idea. I don't know exactly. Probably we can cover both. I don't know.
So first of all, I think that this new narrative is very important, that we understand what we are talking about and that we go in this affirmative and positive direction, not to frighten people, not to accuse them of bad behavior, but really to have this different approach. Then to be very clear about that, what we are talking about, so that we align our agendas and our vocabulary. And to use, yes, also all kinds of media. So now social media, the mainstream media and mm-hmm. so on, this is also important. And to include all the stakeholders mm-hmm. and to nourish the dialogue, because without that, without this inclusion and without dialogue, we cannot move forward. So I think that Europe has this potential for being the orchestrator of this new narrative, to say so.
Yeah. You've just mentioned some minutes ago something for me really important, because it's really not about us. I feel, and we especially as Cradle to Cradle NGO, because we have been delivering for many years now platforms to learn from others. So take the spotlight. From our perspective, it's great to take the spotlight to the best practices, not too much talking about what's going wrong, but showing what's right and how we can implement that, how we can learn from countries. You mentioned China, learn from organizations, learn from companies. Even though we have the feeling we need to empower also consumers, as well as so to say, probably a public bias as well, of course. But how? I mean, do you have an idea how we can strengthen this?
Yeah, first thing is that it is ongoing process. And I think we should be open for that and allow ourselves to do something wrong sometimes, or not to be perfect, because there are no final solutions. And even when we are talking about circular economy, there is no magic stick to say, oh, this is perfectly circular or sustainable or whatever. So this is one thing, not to be really to be open for that and try and error. This is one thing. The other is this exchange that you mentioned. So we are perceiving ourselves here in, let's say, developed world. I don't like this wording, but let's use it for this occasion, that we have the right solutions. But if we listen to the others, or if we observe also those that are again, in brackets, more primitive, they know how to behave much more circular and aligned with nature than we do. So it is not about exporting our knowledge and mm-hmm. our arrogance and thinking, yes, we have the solutions, but really to collaborate and to co-create new solutions, even with those that we did not consider our partners. So this openness is of great importance. And one more thing you asked, at the end, I forgot to. What was it? It was something clever.
Which is great, but I don't know either right now. if there was okay, something clever, I don't know. It was a mistake also.
We'll come to that. Yeah.
Okay. Wait, don't mind. Even though I think we take in another question from the audience, which is: Corona forced us to change. Aren't people changing only when they are forced, meaning voluntariliness will not work as being too slow or too weak? So so this covers more the, as well, again, the change process. So what do you think?
The change process, yes. Yeah, I think that when it is right, when you are forced to change, you have to, otherwise you will not survive. So, but I wouldn't say that this is the only option, and hopefully, but in the history, we can learn from the history, yes, that unfortunately we did not learn.
Can you repeat that? Because the internet connection got lost. Could you just repeat that?
Whenever I say something super wise, No, I'm joking. No. I just said that we have not learned as a human race much from our history, and that still, unfortunately, we need these shocks or stresses or crises that we change. So, but I said that hopefully it will get better.
I think she's saying something wise right now. I fear. And people, I think it's about the connection Berlin, I think. It's not about Ljubljana. Ladea, you're back in the show.
Well,
and
how
I think.
Are we back?
You there was something wise. Always, if you. So Please.
There are some aliens.
Give us your wisdom now.
Yeah, the third time. I will try the third time. Okay. So again, that we have not learned much from the history and that we still need this crisis, shocks and stress to change for better. But I hope that this wisdom will come out and that we will become wiser, as you said, and more mindful and really to change without the shocks. But yes, in Corona crisis, we have realized, or at least it was a shock that has shown us how variable we are and how quick things can change all of a sudden. And also, on the other hand, within this much, it was like that everything shrinked in a way, you know, you couldn't travel, you couldn't buy, you couldn't do anything, that in this micro...
I think she will be back again.
Yeah. Too many things. I can hear you, but...
You can hear me, but I was not able to hear you over the next last 5 seconds, but it's fine, I think. Are you back in the show? This is live, Freunde. Ladea, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, great.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you as well. So okay. back in the show.
You should pick more simple questions, because whenever you ask me something so complex, we lose the connection.
I think there's only complex questions to those complex problems. Why are you dealing with cradle to cradle and circular economy? There's easier topics. Come on. When it comes to those, to the differentiation, because you said you like cradle to cradle very much, probably we could cover some of those differences in between the concepts, or how we can align or integrate cradle to cradle with the circular economy. I think this might be very interesting to hear from you, how you see that we can integrate, and how cradle to cradle and a circular economy concept, how can this work together very well?
I'm sure that we will lose the connection now.
when I start. Yeah, yeah. There's one who's like always taking out the cable. Yeah, yeah. Stop
then
it.
You can continue.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. As long as we have the signal. So I definitely see that it goes hand in hand. And what we could pick up from the cradle to cradle concept, what I like personally and what I mentioned before already, is this relation between the human being and the nature. Mm-hmm. So that human being is not detached from the nature, or is not the master of the nature, but is not the slave of the nature neither. So this coexistency, this is something what I think is really important and what we should emphasize more, even when we are addressing circular economy concept. The second thing is these two, we have in circular economy this famous butterfly that was created by Ellen MacArthur Foundation. And on one side, we have this technical cycle, and on the other, biological. And I think in cradle to cradle, it is perfectly explained what these two cycles actually mean, and is very nicely also not only described, but also supported by the solutions that that can enable, yes, us to maintain these two cycles in the harmony or in the balance. So again, when even I'm using this explanation, when I say, okay, we have this butterfly, but then how to, it is very much cradle to cradle. So I see this linkage here very much. And then if we go to the Circular Economy Action Plan that has been introduced in March this year, so the second edition to say so, I think, again, a lot from cradle to cradle can be absorbed, because we are addressing materials, we are addressing different sectors like electronics, fashion, plastics, and so on. And there are so many good practices, or so many indicators, or so many you name it, standards that you have as mm-hmm. cradle to cradle mm-hmm. that can be embedded in that, mm-hmm. And then we can move forward faster. So I think it's important that we bridge these two concepts because at the end, they aim for the same thing. And I don't think it's important to fight around definitions. It is much more constructive to go in the direction to co-create solutions that are cradle to cradle or circular or green or however you want to call mm-hmm. them.
Mm-hmm. Well, one more question from the audience. What gives you, Ladeia, hope that we can achieve this kind of system change?
This is more about my dream. Then hopefully we have to dream, otherwise dreams cannot become true. But I will go back to something that I mentioned. This is this mindfulness. And I believe that if we as individuals feel fulfilled, and if we live our true purpose, then we are not afraid of collaboration. And we know that there is nothing we can lose if we collaborate with the others. And then it goes further. So on the individual level, then on the company level, or on the city level, on the national level, among sectors, and then all of a sudden you realize, oh, there is this nice system, this universe in which I personally have my purpose and everyone else as well. And by collaboration, we can achieve more than each individual can. And then we have this systemic transition. And for that, this kind of leadership is needed.
Being part, you are part of the coalition, as well as we with Cradle to Cradle NGO based in Berlin, being part of the global coalition, working in the field, trying as much as possible to have minds shifted, business models shifted, policymakers doing things differently. Coming to an end now, because we've already been talking for 1 hour together, which was really great to that point. I always like or try to take in as much advice as possible. So is there anything you would like to advise us as a Cradle to Cradle NGO, what to do now or in the near future to embrace this type of change?
I am not someone who like advices or neither to give advices. I prefer to share my views and then my experiences, and then you pick up whatever you find valuable for you. So I think that what you do with Cradle to Cradle, as far as I've got the opportunity to experience, is really great. And what I would continue with is that you count so much, or you really nourish this social capital. Yes, this is very nice that you are asking for donations and everything, because money is needed. But to keep the focus on these networks, on the social capital, on the power of human beings who are willing to contribute, to participate. So definitely keep your energy, the enthusiasm and the knowledge as well, because this is not an utopia. What you're doing is absolutely something very grounded and very essential. And I think that everyone can identify with it and live joyful life with implementing those principles in everyday life.
Thank you so much. Ending on such strong words is just a pleasure after 1 hour talking to Ladeia. Thank you very much, everyone out there, for listening and watching to our Cradle to Cradle lab talk here. I want to thank you, Ladeia Godina Kozir, from Ljubljana, live here to the C2C Lab in Berlin. Thank you very much of being part of the show. And you guys, thank you very much for watching. And of course, we would love you to being one of our donors, or of course, following us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. And seeing you all, not next week, because there is a pause, but the week after with our next next show. And finally, just thank you again, Ladea, for your time and all the knowledge you gave into this wonderful discussion. Thank you very much.
So, vielen Dank und alles Gute.
Thank you very much. Take care. Bye.